Welcome to Home Lab Highlights, the show that surfaces practical home lab wins and useful self-hosted tools. Let's start with Docker. They just announced OIDC support for GitHub Actions, and the problem it solves is pretty straightforward. You've probably got personal access tokens sitting in your GitHub secrets right now, and they're long-lived. Someone has to remember to rotate them, and if one leaks, it stays valid until you catch it. Docker's new approach uses OpenID Connect to let your workflows request short-lived tokens instead. One per run, expires in minutes, can't be reused. It's the same pattern AWS and GCP already use for cloud access, now applied to container registry authentication.
The tokens are scoped to the specific job, so even if someone grabbed one mid-run, its usefulness is extremely limited. It's available for Docker Team, Business, or Hardened Images subscriptions, plus their sponsored open source program. The setup is pretty straightforward. You create a connection in Docker Home, define rule sets that control which repos and branches can access which resources, then update your workflow YAML to use the new docker/login action with an environment variable pointing to your connection ID. You can get really granular with the rule sets, pin to a specific branch, allow only certain repos, block pushes from forks entirely. That kind of fine-grained control is what makes this more than just a checkbox.
Shifting to CI/CD infrastructure itself, someone posted on Hacker News about treating your development pipeline as a production system. The argument is straightforward. If your pipeline breaks, your ability to ship fixes breaks with it. The author suggested applying SLOs to pipeline stages, like pipeline runs must complete within 10 minutes 99% of the time, and having a documented runbook for when things fail, just like you would for a service outage.
The discussion thread had some good war stories. One person mentioned their team started treating their Jenkins controller with full monitoring and backup after an outage cost them a day of development time. Another said they now run their CI/CD controllers in high availability mode because a single node failure once blocked the entire team. It's a perspective shift. The tools you use to build and deploy are just as critical as what you're deploying.
There's a GitHub project called Waste from a group called SQLite AI that claims to run the Kimi K3 language model using 29 gigabytes of RAM at half a token per second. The approach is interesting. They store model weights directly in a SQLite database file and use the database's B-tree for lookups instead of loading everything into RAM up front. That 29 gigabyte figure is for the 7 billion parameter version, which is pretty lean compared to some of the memory-hungry runners out there. The trade-off is speed. Half a token per second is slow for interactive use, but could work fine for batch processing overnight.
The repo's README is upfront about it being a research project, not production ready, but it's a clever hack if you're disk I/O bound but RAM constrained. They're essentially using SQLite as a virtual memory manager for the model weights. If you've got a machine with 32 gigs of RAM and you're experimenting with local LLMs, it's worth keeping an eye on, though we haven't seen real-world benchmarks yet.
The open source video editor Shotcut released version 24.07, and the standout improvements are hardware encoding for AMD and Intel GPUs on Linux. They specifically fixed VAPI encoding on AMD's RDNA 3 architecture, which has been a pain point for some folks. They also added AV2 codec support in MP4 containers, which is still niche, but good for future-proofing. If you're running a Jellyfin or Plex server and also doing video editing on the same machine, better hardware encoding means less fan noise and lower power draw when you're processing files.
One more from the feed. Victoria Metrics released version 1.105 with a substantial memory optimization for high cardinality metrics. They changed how they store label names in memory, moving from a map to a more compact data structure, and saw up to 70% memory reduction in real deployments. One example they showed dropped from about 40 gigabytes of RAM to just under 12 gigabytes for the same workload. That's the kind of engineering that matters when you're self-hosting on a budget. Query performance improved slightly too because of reduced memory pressure. If you've been hitting memory limits with your monitoring stack, it's worth checking out.
Our tool highlight is a real-world scale-to-zero setup that a home lab operator named Morten Nordby shared on GitHub. He's got 9 apps that scale themselves to zero when nobody's using them. All 9 go down overnight, and he's been running this on a Kubernetes cluster at home for months.
The repo is essentially a blueprint of his entire setup, 21 apps and 22 infrastructure components. He shared Grafana dashboard screenshots showing clear dips to zero replicas during off hours, with sharp spikes back up when traffic hits. He's inviting people to poke around and steal what's useful.
He's using Kada for the scaling, with its HTTP interceptor handling the wake-up. Here's how it works. Traffic routes to the interceptor first, which holds the request open while the pod starts, then forwards it. So the first request doesn't fail, it just waits a bit. He's also got a cron trigger to keep daily use apps warm, so he's not cold starting every single visit. The cron trigger scales to one replica at 7 a.m., so his morning routine apps are ready when he is. That's a clever balance between savings and usability.
Looking at the actual YAML configuration, he set a cooldown period of 300 seconds after scaling down. That prevents rapid cycling if there's a burst of traffic. You don't want the pod spinning up and down every few seconds. He's also using a custom metric based on request queue length in the interceptor, which is more responsive than just checking for zero active connections. The scaling threshold is if there are more than zero requests waiting in the interceptor's queue for more than 10 seconds, scale up. That means a single request won't trigger a scale up immediately. It has to be sustained demand.
Over 2 days, his dashboard showed about 302 pod hours not spent. The community reaction was mixed, but thoughtful. Some people questioned the real power savings, arguing that containers are already pretty efficient when idle. One commenter did the math. If an idle container uses 5 watts, and you scale it to zero for 12 hours a day, that's 0.06 kilowatt hours saved per day per container. Over a month with 9 containers, that's roughly 16 kilowatt hours, which, depending on your electricity rate, could be a couple dollars. It's small, but it adds up.
Another person shared their own experience. They've seen savings of 5 to 20 watt hours per hour by shutting down VMs and containers they don't need, which translated to about $3 a month for them. They specifically said they wouldn't spin down hard drives because the wear isn't worth the couple bucks. They also mentioned noise reduction as a secondary benefit. Fewer fans spinning means a quieter office. Morton himself noted that for him, the project was as much about learning Kada and optimizing his cluster as it was about the savings. He wrote that the biggest win was understanding his own traffic patterns better and having a more responsive cluster that doesn't waste resources on services nobody is using.
The operational detail worth stealing here is the combination of the HTTP interceptor for on-demand wake-up and the cron trigger for predictable usage. If you're looking to implement this, start by identifying apps with very spiky, user-initiated traffic. The repo shows how to set min replica count to zero and max to whatever you need, then define your triggers. It's a solid template for anyone wanting to experiment without starting from scratch. Pay attention to your pod resource requests and limits, too. If you set them too low, the cold start will be slower as the system struggles to schedule the pod, which negates some of the responsiveness benefit. Sticking with that scale to zero thread, one community member laid out a really practical framework for thinking about what to enable it for and why. They posted this in a Reddit discussion, breaking down their services into yes and no categories based on actual usage patterns and technical requirements, not just theory. The key insight is framing it as a trade-off. The cost is cold start latency. The benefit is resource savings in power and compute headroom.
They have it enabled for forum software and a chat system for friends. If no one's visiting, no resources are needed. It's also on for various random static sites with dependencies that only get accessed infrequently. They gave the example of a documentation site for a side project that might get a few hits a week. Keeping a PHP FPM container and a database warm for that is wasteful, so scale to zero makes perfect sense. They also included a personal finance dashboard they only check on weekends and a tool for generating custom RSS feeds that runs maybe once a day.
But they keep it disabled for their credential manager because it's used frequently and cold starts would be annoying. Also disabled for their NVR, DNS, Home Assistant, and media servers like Plex or Jellyfin, where the service needs to run in the background or auto detection would be ruined. For the NVR, motion detection needs to be always on. For Jellyfin, background tasks like library scanning and live TV tuning require a running instance. These are services where zero isn't an option. Their DNS resolver handles local service discovery, so having it down would break internal networking for other scaled-up services trying to find each other.
They made a distinction between a Signal CLI backend, which needs to run on a schedule to receive messages, and its web UI, which can scale to zero because it just interacts with the CLI on demand. SyncThing was another no-go because it's not HTTP-based. That's a key technical filter. CADA's HTTP scaler won't work for protocols like SyncThing's BEP. They also mentioned leaving their monitoring stack, Prometheus, Grafana, Alert Manager, always on, because you need to be able to see what's happening even when other things are scaled down. Their backup server was also a no, because it runs on a fixed schedule and needs to be ready to initiate transfers immediately.
Their take was that for home software, scale to zero should be more of a why not instead of a why. It's one person's setup and reasoning, but it's a useful framework for thinking about what in your own lab might be a good candidate. They emphasized starting small. Pick one or two low-risk services, implement the scaling, and monitor the cold start latency. If a 5-second wake-up delay is acceptable for that service, then it's a win. This is attributed experience, not a universal rule, but it's a fantastic starting point for your own evaluation. They concluded by saying the mental exercise of categorizing their services was valuable in itself, making them more aware of what each thing actually does and when it's needed.
Here's a quick tip pulled from today's stories. If you're looking at scale to zero, start by auditing your services for two things. One, is it strictly user-facing via HTTP? And two, does it need to do anything in the background on a schedule or listen for events? If it's yes to the first and no to the second, like a static site or a tool you only use occasionally, it's probably a safe first experiment. Just be ready for that initial load delay. A practical step? Use CADA's simple HTTP scaler with a low cooldown period, like 30 seconds for your test. That way, if it scales down too aggressively, it won't take long to wake back up. And as the community highlight showed, keep your monitoring tools running to track the cold start times and make sure they're within your tolerance. Also, consider setting a memory request for your pod that's a bit higher than usual for the first minute after startup. Some applications load data into memory on launch, and giving them a temporary boost can speed up that cold start. Happy hosting.
That's Home Lab Highlights for Friday. Until next time, happy hosting.